there's far too many of you dying.
I think anyone who puckers up their lips and presses it against their boss's buttocks and then smooches is an ass kisser.
I seem to be inept at everything except my work. I'm good at my work. So I confine myself to that. All I want out of life is a 30 share and a 20 rating.
The man's enlarged my mind. He's a poet, warrior in the classic sense. I'm a little man. He's a great man.
Think of it as colors. There's black and there's white. And in between is mostly gray. That's us. Now, gray is a tough color because it's not as simple as black and white. And for the media, certainly not as interesting. But it's who we are.
This is your Closing with Conviction leader fan radio network.
That's pretty good.
And KFAN.com. 1 minute, 48 seconds past the hour of 3 o'clock Central Daylight Time. Welcome back. It's a very special Wednesday edition of the Bumper to Bumper program. It's a 3.5 hour tour on a rather warm, although I think the moist factor is headed in the right direction. I think the dew point's going down Wednesday afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am the host of the program. My name is Dan Barrero. Justin Gardzi is with me as well. We're back at headquarters in St. Louis Park after a very fun, if slightly windy, afternoon and evening at TCO Performance Center. We will be back there for Friday practice. We make the return to Eagan, Minnesota, but we're at headquarters today, and we have a power-packed broadcast that we'll give you details about via the Borton Volvo scorecard in just a couple of minutes. The timing's perfect here because the Twins matinee affair is over. Twins win the rubber game of the three-game series against the Tigers, 4-1, and indeed we got our first look at the new closer. Well, he closed today at least. Jorge Lopez, his 20th save of the year, his first with the Minnesota Twins, and he most assuredly closed with conviction today. Now, a couple asterisks. Even though I'm excited about the deals, I'm excited about adding him to the mix. I think Gardzi's excited as well. But it is the Detroit Tigers. And let's be honest, we've been pretty good at beating the Detroit Tigers no matter who we had in the ninth inning, pitching the ninth inning. Tigers are a mess. I kidded that I think you could strike out a couple of Tigers hitters. They are so prone to strikeouts that I'm convinced, I don't know how fast you could throw, maybe a good off-speed pitch. I don't know, maybe you're a knuckleball guy. Not sure. I think you could get a couple of Tigers hitters out. They overswing at everything. It's embarrassing. But you do what you do, and you take care of business, and you get the victory you needed after a disappointing come-from-behind Tigers win yesterday. You get it done today. And as I mentioned, Jorge Lopez did not mess around. If he knew that this is a very beatable lineup and a team that, you know, he can just dominate, he said, why waste my time? Why labor? I think he threw one ball, and I think he threw two balls. That was it. The rest were all strikes. First hitter he got out on a ground out. Second hitter he got out looking at strike three.
And then three straight pitches, right?
That's correct. And the third, he didn't even bother with a waste pitch. And the third hitter ground out as well. Grand total of seven pitches to get three runners out, or three hitters out, and the strikeout. He looked masterful. He looked like exactly what the Twins could use. And, of course, the beauty of this was, because you have, in this case, Lopez to pitch the ninth, you can go to Duran, but you can go to him in the eighth inning. Now, we got a kind of a clue when Derek Falvey joined us during yesterday's show that Lopez might well be the guy. If you're going to identify one guy as the closer on a team that is kind of is bored with all of those sort of labels, he's going to be the closest to that in part because he told us that he thought with Lopez, there's less concern about whether you're talking about right-handed hitters up there or left-handed hitters up there. And we got the first sign of that because Duran pitched the eighth. In fact, the whole bullpen did well. We even got a look at Fulmer.
Yeah.
He pitched the sixth, gave up one hit, struck out one. So it was a harmless hit. After your guy Joe Ryan went five, giving up one run on three hits, look at our strikeouts.
I know.
Ryan struck out nine.
I think you're right about me being able to strike him out.
I think it is possible.
Yeah.
Fulmer won. Fielbar's back. He pitched the, I guess it would be the seventh inning,
mm-hmm.
and struck out two. Duran came in, walked one, struck out one in the eighth, but gave up nothing. And then Lopez in the ninth. So, one, two, three, four innings of relief work. We give up a grand total of zero runs and one hit. We strike out five and walk one. I wonder how Rocco feels now about being envious of the Milwaukee Brewers. Look at that line. Look at those four pitchers and what they did today. Now, it's going to be, I think, even more encouraging if it happens against, let's say, for example, the Toronto Blue Jays. They're coming in next. They're better than the Detroit Pistons. Oh, I mean the Detroit Tigers. Most teams are better than the Detroit Tigers, and that the proof will be on those occasions. But it's a very nice start. Everybody seemed to have an extra bounce in their step. And let's face it, it's what you're looking for at any trade deadline, frankly, if you're a team that is either in the race or, in the case of the Twins, in first place. Now I think we're back up a game and a half.
Correct.
Guardians, I'm assuming, are playing later today or tonight. White Sox won yesterday, so now we've got, I think, a 2.5 game lead on them, pending on what they're going to be doing later. But where was I going? I don't remember where I was going. The proof will be when we are able to, you know, put, let's say, three or four of these pitchers out there, relief pitchers out there, after we get the requisite five innings from the starter. And by the way, this is a legitimate five innings, at least. You got, you know, he rebounded nicely from his worst start of the season against the San Diego Padres. His earned run average, Ryan's earned run average went up a full run on the basis of him getting just destroyed, if you'll recall, in that last outing against the Padres. But he got the job done again today. It's his eighth victory of the season. That's when we're going to, I think, know a lot more about where this thing is going. But what I know now where I was leading. When you make a deal, or several deals, it can be very invigorating. Not just for the fans, not just for the media, but for the players themselves as well. We talked about this to a certain degree yesterday. For example, I think the Twins, as odd as this sounds, although spending almost the entire season in first place, I think it was easy to occasionally almost get bored with them or to be a little sleepy-eyed about it because of the ups and downs and because of the nature of the division. This is the kind of move that perks you up. It perks everybody up. It makes things more interesting. Let's take a look at these new guys. On paper, they all should be a help. Doesn't always work out that way because it's baseball, but in theory, I got to believe there are more people saying, well, I want to watch the ninth to see my first look at Lopez.
We had an audience around our desks.
We did, actually. That's
for the first time ever
audience.
Since March Madness,
correct,
probably, basically. Like 2019.
There's going to be curiosity. Well, Fulmer pitched today. Less on him because he's not considered one of the grand prizes. But now I'm hearing it's pronounced Mally. Is it Mally or Mally?
Mally.
Mally.
Yes.
I can't keep up with the pronunciation.
Mally.
In any case,
I had to
there's
going to
be curiosity
again.
On Mally.
Yes.
Right? Okay, let's take a look at this guy. A lot of people think his numbers don't even do him justice. That he might even be better than advertised. We'll see, again. But it has a galvanizing bit to it that freshens up a season, does give you at least the impression that the organization is interested in giving a good team a chance to become a better team, and everybody wins. I think in that kind of environment, it adds, especially for the Twins, a team that we don't associate, I think, with, you know, big aggressive moves, even though, again, there were bigger moves to make. I grant that. You could say, well, this isn't a Rudy Gobert big move, because one of the other pitchers would probably be the Rudy Gobert equivalent. But nevertheless, these are legitimate names who definitely helped this ball club. And I have to believe that if you were kind of sleepwalking through this thing and saying, where is this really going? The average Rube looks at this a little bit differently now and is going to pay a little bit more attention to the next several weeks. So how is this going to go? Because we're playing in the next few weeks some pretty good clubs. And I mentioned the Blue Jays this weekend. Toronto's well above 500, right? That's another good example of it. So the bad news is we don't get to play the Tigers forever. I don't even know how many games we have left with them.
I think that was it.
Was that it for the season?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, we go there first weekend in October.
Okay.
We play them three times towards the end before wrapping up on the road against Chicago.
That's true, too. And I guess I shouldn't. Maybe for some people, I'm bearing the lead. Our new catcher, Leon, plugged right in today, seemed to do his job as a signal caller fine, gets two hits.
Double.
Three at-bats, drives in two runs. What the hell else can you get? Fulmer does his job. Lopez does his job. And as a bonus, the utility catcher we brought here basically for depth, he does more than one might expect with his two hits. Again, all against the Motor City Kitties.
I still wish there was like a GoPro or a camera in the executive suite today. And then just like following Falvey down to the clubhouse after the ball game.
Beaming.
Yeah, and then just going over to Rocco and like, all right, bud, we good? Okay, cool. All right, get some rest. Toronto tomorrow. I just would love to see that because you can't feel any better today, can
no,
you?
No, you can't.
If you're the Twins?
You cannot feel any better. You cannot feel it. I was disappointed that we lost last night. I wanted the game.
I know.
I wanted us to be so inspired. And by the way, the bullpen gave that one away.
Yeah.
Did not?
Yes.
Although we didn't use any of the new pieces yesterday. We gave them a minute or two to breathe. And perhaps the most encouraging aspect to today, beyond the new guys on the block helping us, is that Byron Buxton right back in the lineup. I had pretty much assumed that we weren't going to see him for several more days. And based on what we had been told yesterday, and even the way I think Falvey spoke yesterday, and there he was. Now, he wasn't playing in center, but he was DHing today, got one hit and three at-bats, scored two runs, walked once. That's all good. He's actually been raising his, well, his batting average is still only .221, but you get my point. So all's right with the world for the Minnesota Twins at this point. Very encouraging day yesterday, at least in terms of the trades. Not so much last night, but they make sure you avoid the ultimate embarrassment at this point, losing a series to the Detroit Tigers. We will give you the Borton Volvo scorecard today because it's varied. It's eclectic, and I think it'll hit all of the right notes based on some stories that are out there both locally and nationally.
When we come back, I know you've got some other stuff to talk about, but there is an update in the Deshaun Watson story in regards to the National Football League move.
Interesting. That's a good tease right there.
Fan Plus.
This way, whether you're talking about playing a good team or a bad team, okay? Forget about that part of it. Regardless of that, if you look at the pitchers we use today, instead of Fulmer and Lopez, we used four relief pitchers. There's a decent chance that we would have had to be subjected to an inning of Pagan. Which, by the way, it's not like he never pitches reasonably, but is dangerous, no matter where you put him, and probably an inning of Duffy. Now, those guys are going to be used because you can't use the same pitchers over and over, but it's a good example we're talking about. Now you're throwing some other people out, and I'm not saying Fulmer is going to be perfect, or even Lopez is going to necessarily be perfect, although he pretty much has been against everybody except us, but this is what why we were clamoring for giving yourself some alternatives that gives you perhaps over the long haul or even a short haul a better chance to take full advantage of being in a crappy division. Because we all know that's the bottom line, but there's nothing illegal about taking better advantage. And by the way, if we had taken better advantage, the only reason we haven't taken better advantage already is because of how bad that bullpen has been through several key series. We don't need to go all over the details, but you know which ones I'm talking about, including that five-game series against the Guardians. That's the beauty of, and for those who say, why bother? You say, well, because it's amazing how much better it might look when you actually see the effort and see different people in those positions and see what they might do with that opportunity. It's stunning how much better it might look and how, and so you start believing that, well, yeah, they're not a great team and we know they're not going to be better than the Yankees, but when are they going to be better than on paper than the Yankees anyway? But it doesn't look like a trifle to say you add this piece and that piece, because it almost becomes exponential in terms of how much better it can look for all the obvious reasons. Then the guys I mentioned that you didn't use today, maybe you don't have to use them as much, period. Or if you do use them, maybe you're able to put them in what we like to classify as less important, big leverage situations as well. I want to cover a couple of things. Guardsy mentioned breaking news on the Deshaun Watson story. Before we do that, also breaking news that I'm sure I know some of you have heard, but perhaps many of you have not. Paige Beckers, Hopkins' own, is done for the upcoming season already. She apparently tore her ACL in a pickup game on Monday, and she has been ruled out for the 2022-23 season. Horrible news for her, obviously, for the UConn program as well. What was her injury last year?
It was a knee injury of some sort, I believe.
Is it the same knee, do we know?
I don't know that.
We don't have any details yet. But this is being called a torn ACL, and she is indeed done. That's a bad, obviously, break for her. Now, we all knew that the big question in the Deshaun Watson story was whether the NFL was indeed going to appeal the ruling of the independent arbitrator. And I think you have the answer to that question.
20 minutes ago, as we were talking about in the first segment, Adam Schefter tweet, among others, .com Tom got in on it as well. Roger Goodell will determine who will hear the appeal, according to NFL spokesperson, and the league has filed its appeal in the Deshaun Watson suspension. They are seeking an indefinite suspension, which is an interesting indefinite. What does that mean?
That's obviously,
by definition,
1 year.
We don't even know.
Right.
And so the personal conduct policy, just reading some Schefter tweets to kind of clean everything up, says the appeal will be processed on an expedited basis. Commissioner or his designee may overturn, reduce, modify, or increase the discipline previously issued, will be final and binding on all parties.
And did you say it's Goodell himself? He's not designating it to somebody else within his administration?
He will determine who will hear the appeal.
Ah, okay.
So he'll decide.
He'll decide. It might be him.
He's bringing his own judges.
It might be somebody else.
He's packing the court.
So this would suggest that whatever fears some people say the league should have and Goodell should have about what Pandora's box you might be opening up, because this is going to end up in the courts, they're ready. Their attorneys, their lawyers are ready to say, bring it on, baby. We're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to go after it. Previously, what the NFL had said was, well, I don't know if the NFL had said it, but what had been reported about the NFL's viewpoint was an indefinite suspension above it, but that another year suspension, and it almost left the door open to what might be longer than that. So what they mean by indefinite is, I guess, an open question, but the most important question has been answered. They're not taking it sitting down. They're going after it.
And as Pelissero, I think, pointed out, what he thinks and what most people think are going to be the next step now is that the NFL Players Association is going to sue the NFL in federal court.
Yep.
And on the basis of that, they don't, you shouldn't be able to appeal this. And what he mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. There was like three different federal courts in three different states that he covered that deal in. He says this has happened before.
Yes.
As you're trying to figure out suspensions and this side against that side, and then the lawsuit comes and everything that comes along with it. We know that was StarCaps here with the Williams Wall.
That's true.
Kevin and Pat Williams, they took that to federal court. And so that's probably going to be what's going to happen next. They have 2 days. The PA has 2 days to respond to this, and I would assume that's what they respond with.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. And you know, again, they can't appeal. I mean, they agreed to the structure, as goofy as it is, that allows Goodell to take it back. The question is, what will the courts do with that as it relates specifically? Because I don't think there can be any argument with that's the procedure. The league, whether you like it or not, Goodell has a right to take it back. The question, I guess, is going to go into the, you know, whether there's agreement on what this arbitrator found, suggesting that, in effect, it may be a stiffer punishment is deserved here, but you haven't created enough of a precedent, or you haven't put enough stuff in writing with this sort of behavior that, in the judge's view, gave you the right to say you wanted something a lot more draconian than what I ended up with here, which is six games. We've got a lot of show today. The breaking news from earlier today, or was it last night? When did the news break on broadcast immortality?
I heard about it this morning, so I don't know if it was last night or this morning, but I woke up to the news. I think it was last night because it happened during some later games.
Vin Scully has passed away, and to help us owed him, a guy who knows him well or knew him well, and in fact was when I texted him, was putting together his own column on the Vin Scully legacy. Kevin Kernan is going to join us on our next segment, and in fact, we may talk some trade deadline stuff with him if we have time as well. Tim Cheetah, who might have a Vin Scully story or two himself, the former Major League Baseball umpire and one of our favorites, is going to rejoin us today at 4:30. Also to talk about the, what now, 35th anniversary of the Joe Niekro nail file gate story that I was fortunate enough to cover following Niekro to the David Letterman show because he became quite the folk hero. So we'll go down that memory lane at 4:30. Pat Kessler is going to join us at 5:15. I think we had our first debate between the major gubernatorial candidates.
Farm Fest.
Exactly. And so we'll get what he has heard about that. How much of it he got to see, I don't know. I think he saw a lot of it. In any case, a very full show, lots of stuff to get to. Let's come back and chat with our old pal Kernan on Vin Scully.
And the Fan.
You are looking now at the Dodger bullpen contingent and also the big left-hander Jimmy Cott, 18-game winner in the American League. And Cott is 1-1 in this 1965 World Series. For the 18th time in 62 World Series, we go to a seventh game.
The Larkin, the left-hand hitter up there, bases loaded, one out, and the game on the line. Pena, right foot on the rubber. You can taste the pressure here in the dome as Alejandro straightens up. And the pitch to Larkin. Swung on, a high fly ball into left center. The run will score. The ball will bounce for a single. And the Minnesota Twins are the champions of the world.
That, of course, the voice of Vin Scully. First, you heard him previewing Game 7, 1965 World Series, involving the Twins and Jimmy Cott, as he put it. And then the radio call of the 1991 World Series Game 7, the big finish, Gene Larkin, Dan Gladden, etc. Delighted to be joined today by Kevin Kernan. He is on the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline. He writes for ball9.com, and when I had texted with him earlier today, he said, look, he'd already sent out a photo of him with Vin Scully. But he's also telling me that he was putting together a column on that very subject. Let me, before I say hi to Mr. Kernan again, remind folks, I don't want to take anything for granted here. Scully was the voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers for more than six decades, described by the team in a statement as the heartbeat of the Dodgers. He, in 2016, after 67 years, retired. And he goes all the way back to when the Dodgers played in Brooklyn. He followed the Brooklyn Dodgers to Los Angeles when they moved in the late 1950s as well. Mr. Kernan will help us, I think, gain an even greater appreciation with his thoughts on this particular iconic broadcaster. Kevin, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it as always.
Oh, Dan, always great to be with you.
So when you are putting together, trying to capture the essence of why the name seems to resonate to the degree that it does, what hits you? What stands out to you? What are the key points for you?
Well, first of all, Vin Scully was baseball's friend. You know, he was your friend. He was my friend. He was everybody's friend. Anybody ever listened to him on the radio, TV? He brought the game home to us. And there was nothing better, Dan, than going to Dodger Stadium and making a pilgrimage to his broadcast booth and sitting and talking with him. And we had a good relationship because, let me take you all the way back to my days in San Diego. Phil Collier was one of Vin's best buddies, and he was the writer for San Diego Union Tribune at the time. I followed Phil. Phil was a World War II veteran, went across the Rhine, great guy. And him and Vin were like buddies. So once you get introduced to Vin from that perspective, you have a deeper relationship with Vin. And the last time I talked to him about a year ago, and we spoke for about 25 minutes, and I'll give you some of the quotes from him. But going to see Vin in 2016, I went to see him in his booth, and I had the direct quote here, and better than me trying to explain what he was, this is what he said to me. Now take, this is Vin Scully in 2016, 67 years on the job, started in 1950. And he loved my name, Kevin, by the way, because one of his kids was named Kevin. Mm. So he always remembered me. He said, Kevin, I've said many times I should spend more time on my knees than I do. Scully, a devout Catholic, told me. Because that is all I can think of. It has to be God's will. I mean, to give me a job that I wanted at such a young age and then allowing me to do it for all these years. Mil gracias, speaking some Spanish to us, too. Thank you, God. And this was 88 at the time, and he was thankful for every day. And he loved what he was doing. And in our last conversation, this is, you know, he always brings up God and what God means to him. And he didn't, you know, even though he was this guy on a hill, you know, he had a tough life. His oldest son, I don't know if you were aware, Michael, he was killed in a helicopter accident in 1994. And so, you know, there was some rough times there. And, you know, he says, and I asked him, I said, why are you so good to me and the writers in general? And he says, you know what? I'm so thankful for any opportunity to do anything I can to pay back the game, because those were the people who wrote about it and who played it. And I love those people. And in 1950, Dan, you got to realize this too. He was not Vin Scully. He was some kid on the beat who the writers, for the most part back then, were very territorial. They didn't like him, but the New York writers took him under his wing. And he told me Dick Young.
The legendary sports writer, yeah.
Legendary, hard-nosed. I mean, I was at dinner one time with Dick Young. He made the poor waitress. Back then, there were waitresses, not servers, you know.
Yep.
And he made her change the light bulb in the Blue Whale out in L.A., I think it was, because it was too bright on our dinner table. And then about 10 minutes later, you know what, it's not bright enough, put a new one, you know. So she had to change the light bulb again. So we're not talking about easy people to get along with. But he said Dick Young really looked out for him, and he called him Schooly, off his name being Scully. But he affectionately called him Schooly, as in schoolboy Rowe. And they took care of him because he said when he was first in the business, he'd go to some cities and the writers were so territorial, they wouldn't let them use the press box bathroom. Imagine this. He'd have to run through the crowd and take a leak with the regular crowd and then get back and broadcast.
Oh, my.
So that's just a little bit of background of how humble he was and how, you know, he went to church every – he usually got one on Saturday evenings, and just a wonderful guy. And I think Howie Rose, I remember talking to Howie, and we all know Howie, great broadcaster with the Mets, hockey, baseball. And, you know, Harry, I asked him for this particular story in 2016. I asked him what you just asked me, and he said, you know what? Vin is the greatest friend of the game of baseball has ever had. He's Babe Ruth and the Beatles all rolled into one. And we all know that because we heard what he did. You know, the Hank Aaron, this, that, Don Larson, football, too. You know, he called the catch, you know, to play with Montana. And he did it wonderfully. So yeah, spending time with him was wonderful. Our conversation, the last time I called him was about Gil Hodges. So he gave me some unbelievable stories about Gil Hodges.
Well, what has always struck me about him is that he's the consummate broadcaster, in part because, well, many things. One of the reasons he was so literate, smart literate guy. He had great recall, and he had the ability, he cared about detail. He gave you information that other broadcasters either don't remember or are kind of bored with, without it becoming a drone broadcast, without it becoming boring. And then when he needed to and had the time to, then he could spin a yarn. He was spare at times. He didn't overtalk when silence and just the noise of the crowd was what told the story for him. He had those instincts, and you either have them or you don't. And it's the combination of all those things is what makes him stand above. Really, there's a lot of other good broadcasters out there, but puts him probably in a plateau on his own.
Oh, he's on his own mountaintop, and even that Hank Aaron, I know they've if you hear it now, the home run breaking Ruth's record. They kind of boiled it together. But there was like a 45-second or 1-minute gap where he actually went to the back of the booth, drank his coffee, and let the crowd just tell the story. Then he brought in a story about a black man in the South being cheered, you know, so wonderful. And the other thing he had, the timing, his lyrical delivery was incredible. Even, like I said, I just listened to this tape again, and it almost brought tears in my eyes, you know, 25 minutes of it, just talking in general. And, you know, anything he brought up was a great conversation. And when Phil Collier retired, I'm getting back to Phil for a second, just because this shows you about him. So I waited. I was the head of the baseball writers in San Diego at that year. So I wanted to get the press room named in Phil's honor. I waited till the Dodgers came in, and I asked Vin to say a few words. He comes in at the drop of a hat, gives like the best speech you could ever hear, like at Cooperstown, about Phil Collier and what he meant to him. And then just moved on and did the game. And I brought that up to him in our last conversation. He said, Kevin, I don't remember what I said, but I know it came from my heart. And it didn't come from my brain. It came from my heart. And everything he said, getting back to your point, I think came from his heart. I mean, you could just tell that this guy believed it. I mean, Gil Hodges, one quick story. He was talking about, you know, Gil Hodges was kind of like the protector for Jackie Robinson because Jackie couldn't fight back early on.
Yep.
So if guys would slide in hard, Gil would run out there, and he was so damn strong that he would pick guys off, like, you know, just barehanded. So one time in Sportsman's Park, and this shows you about the way he weaves a story. This is an essence of a story. It's not a physical story. So Jackie and Gil go for a foul ball in Sportsman's Park in St. Louis along the first baseline. Right there, all of a sudden, a whiskey bottle comes, and Vin tells him, a whiskey bottle flies right through him. And Vin was horrified. So what does Gil Hodges do? He just gives Jackie a gentle pat on the back, arm around his shoulder, and walks back to the position like, you know, we are in this together. Nobody, you know, and that's why his teammates always considered him a saint. That's why Brooklyn was praying for Gil Hodges, and you know, Vin was there for the whole thing.
All of it.
Every minute. It was wonderful.
It's remarkable. I'm going to read you a couple of sentences from the LA Times. I thought did a really smart thing today in all of their testimonials. They offered the transcript from the half inning, the last inning of Sandy Koufax's perfect game. And I can't read it like he says it, but just to give you an example of how he could interweave so many things on the fly under, you know, that kind of heat, here's what he says. Koufax into his windup in the 1-2 pitch, fastball fouled back out of play. In the Dodger dugout, Al Ferrara gets up and walks down near the runway, and it begins to get tough to be a teammate and sit in the dugout and have to watch. Sandy, back of the rubber, now toes it. All the boys in the bullpen straining to get a better look as they look through the wire fence in left field. 1-2, the count to Chris Krug. Koufax, feet together, now to his windup in the 1-2 pitch, fastball outside, ball two. A lot of people in the ballpark now are starting to see the pitches with their hearts. The pitch was outside. Torborg tried to pull it over the plate, but Vargo, an experienced umpire, wouldn't go for it. That's just lyrical. That's just such great stuff, and you're weaving in your own ability to observe with the circumstances, the counts, all that kind of good stuff. I mean, it doesn't get any better than a lot of people in the ballpark now are starting to see the pitches with their hearts. I mean, that's brilliant.
And like I said earlier, he comes from his heart, and that's what makes him so special. Yeah, in all this, I asked him, I said, what was this like when you started? And he said, Kevin, he said, 1950, he said, I had one goal. My whole idea for at least the first 5 years of my career would be like a rookie walking up to home plate saying, now don't strike out. My whole attitude was, please, Vin, don't screw up. So he came in with that humble attitude right from the start. And with even in that answer, he's painting a picture. He just paints the most beautiful baseball pictures. And you know what? No exit. I know it's a different era, and I'm not going to kill the nerds because we're talking about something serious here. But no exit velocity, no this, no that.
Yes.
He made baseball. This is why we love baseball, and that's why Vin loved baseball. And again, with Phil Kier, one small other example. So Vin is doing the game of the week. So he's also doing the Dodgers. He does a game of the week in Chicago, hops on a plane, goes through like a night game in Houston. It goes like 23 innings. He plays another game. It's an extra inning game. He gets to the press box after the game. He's in the press room. He gets a telegram from Phil Kier saying, and Phil's going, Lou Gehrig is a wimp. He's got nothing on you. And Phil laughed. I mean, Phil laughed, obviously, back in San Diego, laughed about it. And Vin laughed about it. But Vin also, let's not forget, Vin had a great sense of humor.
He did.
And he brought that humor every day to the ballpark. And that's why you're going to see. You go on social media today. What are you going to see? I'm not the only guy with a picture. There's going to be a million pictures with Vin Scully because he always had time, always had the smile, had a special place in New York because he was a Fordham guy for New York people. And he would always ask about Fordham and things like that. Never forgot where he came from, and that's why he always was so wonderfully with his time with me. I mean, who's gonna I looked at my job the same way. I didn't want to screw it up. You know, for the first 47 years, I didn't want to screw it up. You know, so Vin just is everything that's great about baseball. And also, just it's a little ironic, but 43 years to the day of Thurman Munson dying, he dies. You know,
so that's it's right.
So it's but I think this is totally different. I think everybody is celebrating Vin Scully and what he means to baseball. And I hope, in a way, all these broadcasters and everything can get back to a little bit about how they want to broadcast the game and not how other people want them to broadcast.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And you know, he has over the years he did work with partners, but he worked alone a lot and pulled it off brilliantly, marvelously, which ain't easy. You know how long baseball games can go, even back in the day, and how much extra air time, you know, the sort of time there is that you got to fill. And yet he didn't miss a beat, you know, almost as if he just was talking directly to the fans and didn't necessarily need to be carrying on a conversation with his partner. He was good at it. He was generous with his partners, but he didn't need them, which that's the ultimate challenge. If you can be a big league baseball umpire, or I should say a play-by-play guy for a team for 162 games and do it on your own, man, that's impressive.
Well, isn't that special that you just said that? Because one of the quotes in my column is him talking about this. He says, I very much don't think I'm broadcasting. I just think I'm talking to friends about the game.
That's it.
And that's what he did. And here's the other great thing, because all that time, and he relaxed you in the game. Even in tense moments, you were relaxed listening to Vinny. He brought you to the edge of your seat, but you weren't like in a panic mode.
Correct.
But here's another little thing that I loved about Vin was Dodger Stadium has the worst elevator in baseball. It's kind of akin to the Madison Square Garden basketball elevator. It never comes. It's always late. But at the end of the game, you got to get shot down there in the elevator So here we run out, and every game I was at Dodger Stadium, this happened. We run out, we're waiting in the elevator, and the girl in charge of the elevator, she waits for Mr. Scully to come on. Vin comes on, and we don't go down. We go up to the parking lot for another, like, 2 minutes and 3 minutes, and nobody ever said a word. They just said the deepest respect for Mr. Scully. It was like getting on that elevator and going the wrong way to do your job was what it was all about, because Vin needed to get out and beat that Dodger traffic and get on Vin Scully way and make his way home.
That's a great nugget, because you and I both know how crusty and cranky and annoyed beat writers are on Deadline, man. Newspaper people, there's probably nobody else that they wouldn't MF. There wouldn't anybody else. They'd say, what the hell are we doing here? I got to get down there. I got to get to the clubhouses. But it's Vin Scully, man. That's like royalty.
Well, I remember one time, real quick, and it's a different story, but talk about it. You know, baseball players can be that way, too. I remember one time being late in the Giants clubhouse, and I wasn't supposed to be there, but I was talking to Bochy, so I got stuck in there, and I'm on my way out, and the clubby tells Barry Bonds, hey, and Clinton had no longer been president, but he was the president. You know, he had passed president,
right.
But he was at the ballpark that day. And he goes to Barry Bonds, the clubby, who's laying on the couch. He goes, hey, Barry, President Clinton wants to say hi. And Barry goes, hey, if you tell President Clinton, if he wants to say hi, drag his ass in here. And again, this is, I'm not trying to make him a bad guy.
Yes.
I'm just explaining that's the way we are.
Yes, that's absolutely the way we're wired. Last quick things here. Kevin Kernan, our guest, you're writing about him. When's your column going to drop on Vin? Do you know?
Well, I'm going to send it as soon as we're done, and hopefully
good.
It gets up pretty early.
Awesome.
Yeah. But definitely by tomorrow. It'll be there all day tomorrow.
All day tomorrow,
I'll
for sure.
I'll post it @AMBF_Kernan on Twitter.
Well, real quick, I want to get your reaction to a very busy, obviously, flurry of deals, including several involving the Twins, who didn't go for the biggest pitching names, but definitely, I think, helped themselves. What did you make of the flurry of activity, and any particular thoughts on the moves that the Twins made?
Yeah, I'll start with the Twins. I like what they did. I like Lopez. I've seen him with, you know, he does pitches well against the Yankees. You know what happens, and Mahler was a good move too, and Fulmer. You got to get pitching arms, and most of all, it's a psychological thing, because these guys in the clubhouse, they're worn down this time of year.
Yep.
They want to know that management is on their team, on their side, getting people. So anybody who made moves to improve the team, and I think most of the moves are pretty good across the board for teams right now, because most of it's prospects, and prospects have never been more overrated than now, and it's a joke. And I commend these teams for making these moves, and even little things. Trey Mancini, imagine going from Baltimore's left field to Crawford boxes. He hits a 2-run homer today. You know, so all these teams got a little bit better. The big one, of course, is Soto. He's Tatis's friend. I think, you know, that'll help that team with Hader too. And no, I like what the Twins did. I think the Twins pretty much locked themselves into a playoff spot with that move. And the Yankees are coming back to earth a little bit. They used to have the best record. Now the Dodgers have a better record.
Yeah.
Gerrit Cole continues to not throw his fastballs for some bizarre reason and got clubbed around today. But there were a lot of good moves, and even little moves. The Yankees, F. Ross, I like that move from the Cubs. There's so many. The Mets could have done a little bit more, but I like what the Braves did. Big day for the Braves.
Well, one of the things we talked about, I've been on this for weeks, and we got back into it yesterday once the trade story started breaking, is you can talk yourself out of, on the basis of saying, well, we're not going to be as good as the Yankees, or we're not going to be as good as the Astros. You can talk yourself, Kevin, out of doing anything, ever, on that basis.
And that's what they do, most of them.
It's self-fulfilling. The longer you go saying, it's not worth it, the more likely it is that you're never going to get to that place where it might be worth it, right? So sometimes you do have to take some shots at this thing.
You got to cross the street. You got to cross the highway. You know what I mean? You got to be careful. Look both ways and go. But you got to go. And what I've seen with teams, you know what it is, Dan? It's an insurance policy to keep their job.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they got, we got these prospects coming in 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
And now you got to keep this guy around. But I actually read some comments from some GMs that didn't make moves. Like, well, you know, I really like what so-and-so did, because they didn't make a crazy move and they kept their value, or they got value. It's not about value at this point. It's about winning. winning, winning, winning. Who talks about winning? Those are the guys you think that are going to move forward. And that's, again, that's why I like what the Yankees did a little bit. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to see. And the Mariners, you know, Castillo did it again today, beat the Yankees for the second time this year. Those are the guys that make a difference. And Lopez, he'll make a difference for the Twins. And you pick up the bullpen in the major leagues this time of the year, all of a sudden your whole team is better. And don't forget, you're going into a playoff situation, too, where you already got a killer in Correa. So he knows what he needs. He knows what these guys need. So I think the Twins, I almost hate to say it, but I actually think the Twins, because I make such fun of them for the last 20 years, but I almost think the Twins have got an edge to them this year that they haven't had in past years. And I'm actually looking forward maybe to a postseason matchup with the Yankees.
We're going to have to save the audio on this because, this is... I thank God I'm sitting down. I mean, because that's not the kind of thing I remember on the Twins.
Scully, so yeah. I'm in a good mood.
You're softened. You've gotten softened up a little bit today, right? You're a little nostalgic today. I get it.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to reading your Vin Scully piece. Thanks as always, man, for the giving us the time.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And take care. And go Twins.
There you go. Thanks. That is Kevin Kernan, Ball9.com, longtime tabloid baseball writer, NBA writer. He did, he's reminding me with those stories, he did work in San Diego for a time as well. He's connected. He's in his own way, a bit of baseball history for sure, because he has covered so much, has seen so much, and I'm really proud of him, most of all, for dropping in, even on the occasion of owing Vin Scully a shot.